So this is the first episode of a little podcast that I'm going to so honorably call Pretentiousness. Because let's be honest, that's what it's really going to be about, and in a joking way, obviously. But I kind of want to have like different people on this, different times, and I think a lot of it will be the same people. But it's always interesting to get on and talk to different people about different things, and obviously I don't know about everything, but it's always neat to get other people's insights on certain things. But with today being topic about like Oscars and movies that are out now, I figured this would be awesome because you and I have been known to have like really cool conversations about movies, and even if people are sitting around us that like don't know what we're talking about, they're usually pretty interested. And I've kind of been telling people about that, more specifically the other day when we were shooting in Kansas City. We just got on one of those, you know, just those non-stop conversations about talking about things, and we had to apologize to everybody around us. We were like, hey, sorry, like when we start talking about this, like, we can't stop. And everybody's like, no, like, we're really interested, like, we don't really know what you guys are talking about, but damn, it's really interesting. So
We said that to our friends. We didn't like stand up in the restaurant and be like, sorry everyone, we're just get away from ourselves for movies. But you know, I like the image of that though. But yeah, no, you're right. No matter what, we tried to talk about anything and it somehow ties back to a movie or some thing that we watched. So yeah, no, I'm excited to shoot the shit with movies with you. And is this a cussing podcast?
I don't care.
Let's find out.
We'll just, yeah, let's find out together. Let's find the answer.
And back to the pretentiousness thing. Yeah, it's we really know nothing, but it's fun to act like we do. So here we are. But Oscar nominations happened recently. A lot of good movies this year. This was just a good movie year for me personally. I loved a lot of the stuff. Yeah.
So just right off the bat, I guess we can just let people know in case they don't. Best Picture nominee, we'll just do Best Picture. I mean, everything kind of branches off Best Picture most of the time. All the other things kind of trickle down from that. It's kind of a pattern that the Oscars comes to. But we have Call Me By Your Name, The Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. So those are our Best Picture nominees for the year. I've seen Three Billboards, Phantom Thread, Get Out, Dunkirk, and Call Me By Your Name. There's still a few of them I have not seen.
This is one of the rare years where I actually have seen most of them. The only one that I haven't seen so far is Darkest Hour.
You said you didn't really have any desire to see that either, did you?
Yeah, it's like, I bet it's going to be fine, but it's kind of the imitation game of the year for me. It's just like, it's cool. Like, I'm sure I won't dislike it if I see it, but at the same time.
I never saw the Imitation Game. I never did. I don't know why.
It is really good. It's fine. Like, I know how you feel about biopics and things like that, but it's worth saying. It's got some really great parts to it. But
you know, this is really funny. I had somebody over the other night, and I have my movie collection in my room, and we were trying to pick out a movie. And as we were going through it, they started like throwing out all of these movies, like, oh my god, this movie and that movie and this movie, and I realized that they were all past Oscar nominations, and I was like, what the hell, like, why do I even own these movies? And then I realized very soon after this person started picking out all these movies that I remembered, this one year I had decided to just like go out and buy every Best Picture nominee on Blu-ray, and I think I have maybe watched all of them once. And I don't know about you, man, but we've had discussions about this before in the past, but to me, that says so much about what Best Picture even means, and as far as even a Best Picture nomination. I think the last Best Picture that actually won that I have seen countless times because I just never get tired of it, and this is obviously just a personal preference thing because I just love the narrative, but I think it's Birdman, to be honest. And I don't know, like, Spotlight was amazing and Moonlight was incredible, but you know, there are things that after I've watched for a while, I just don't really have, I don't know, I don't have any desire to go back and watch them.
Yeah, that's something with movies a lot, is that's a huge philosophy of mine, is that you're going to want to, like, your favorite movies are those that you watch over and over again, and you pick something up different each time. It's like the idea of music. Like, who the hell listens to an album and is like, okay, yeah, that was pretty good, and then never picks it up again?
Yeah.
I don't understand that at all. Yeah, I mean, I loved Moonlight last year, but at the same time, I haven't watched it since I saw it in theaters. I want to, and I've seen, like, clips and things from it, but I want to pick it up again, but I just haven't. So, yeah, you're right in that aspect. But, yeah, to think of, like, film as this is the Oscar-nominated films and these are the best of the year, that's kind of a misnomer. Like, there's so many other films that didn't get nominated, obviously. Mm-hmm. And other films that sometimes didn't even get a wide release that are so much better than some of the other films on here.
Yeah,
so it's always give and take. But, no, I completely agree with that.
I don't know if we had this conversation the other day, and a lot of people actually don't know this, and a lot of people actually ask. And I think to a certain extent, there's still a lot I don't know about it either. But people always ask, you know, how it works out. How do the Oscars work out? You know, how do they decide? How do they determine what is, you know, who makes the decisions? And I always tell people that one time I was really bored in class, and I read, like, I think it was on the Academy's website. It was, like, legit. It wasn't like a blog or anything, but it was like a legit process of what everybody goes through. Of how they pick the nominations. And I've always told people that it's the Academy is actually like the, I guess the big, God, like, country club of all the celebrities. Like, you actually have to be a part of a union to be in the Academy, and you can only be in the Academy as a part of your union. So, for instance, like Brad Pitt, he's in the Academy as through the producing guild. So, like, he cannot vote for best actor. He cannot vote for, you know, best director. He can only put his two cents in for best picture, which is what the producers, that's the award they receive. So that's why I personally like the Oscars a lot more than anything else, is because you're getting, and that's just in the American sense, though, because there's so many great movies that are coming out all around the world, but just for the American, you know, collection of movies that came out that year, you have industry people deciding on industry awards. So you have all the people who are in the editing, you know, the editing society, you know, the American Society of Editors, you have them voting for best editor. So you don't just have a bunch of random people saying, well, that film was edited so great. And it's like a director who's, or not a director, but like somebody who's in the acting guild, who's never, you know, done acting in their life. So you kind of have this editing, sorry. So you don't really have this randomness. It's pretty selective, but you know, and everybody is sent screeners. You're sent screeners for everything that's nominated for those categories. And so, but a lot of the times, you know, you have to ask yourself, like, celebrities' lives are crazy. A lot of times they don't even have time to go watch the movies that they were in. I know that a lot of that is like psychological, of them not wanting to watch the stuff that they were in. But I mean, damn, like, you know, I really, really doubt that they sit there and watch every screener for everything that they're sent to make a, you know, conscious decision on what they liked best. I don't know. It's hard for me to believe, but I can't just assume.
Yeah, no, I could see that. And that's why I think some categories don't get enough attention as they should, especially like documentary and foreign film, because a lot of people don't realize that for the foreign film section, countries only nominate one film. That's it. Mm-hmm. And then they just send it our way. So I know it's not going to reach a bigger audience for the Oscars, and they're not going to get better ratings, but I wish that they would have like more foreign film and actually shine a spotlight on those. But
oh God, absolutely.
Yeah. That's the way it goes. Or at least like even different ones for foreign film, because American film and like foreign film, it's weird to have like 90% of like the nominations for American films, but like hardly any for the rest of the world. That's just like, and I know that Hollywood produces more bigger budget stuff, but I don't know, just a complaint of mine.
I think not to get too serious too quickly, and I guess I should say controversial too soon in the podcast, but like, I don't know. I think that a lot of, and I think we've had this discussion before. I mean, we've had a lot of discussions, but I think that's one of the problems with America's conception of the Oscars being too white or only black and white in the sense of race, is that we are not allowing other races and countries a fair, you know, share of the Oscars. If the Oscars really is wholeheartedly just an American event and an American ceremony celebrating American cinema, then fine. Okay. Yes, you're going to get majority white and black people, right? But if you would be more accepting of Japanese films and Mexican films, then you're going to have more nominees of those different races. I think people expect, because the America is a melting pot, that just means there has to be a member of each race who is very, very good at all of these things. And it's just like, well, the population, you know, here in America, especially when it comes to entertainment, because of the way the country, you know, went starting these type of entertainment industries, was predominantly white and black. And so, I don't know. That's kind of what you have right here. Like, again, you know, that I am like biased. I do have like my Mexican heroes, with my mom being from Mexico, like Alejandro Iñárritu and Alfonso Cuarón and Emmanuel Lubezki. I love when they were dominating the Oscars a couple years back with Birdman, Gravity, The Revenant, and all that stuff. And so, you know, yeah. nobody blinks an eye that these are Mexican filmmakers. You know, nobody does, because you have Leonardo DiCaprio starring it. Nobody's going to think, oh, well, it's, you know, it's a Mexican based film. It's like, no, because you have it about indigenous people. You have it being with Leonardo DiCaprio. So automatically you're not going to assume that it was made by Mexicans, and that didn't really get a lot of attention. And of course, people have a stereotype of Mexicans being really, really dark. And so whenever they see people like Alejandro on their picture for Best Director or stuff like that, he doesn't really look like what people think a Mexican looks like. So automatically they're like, Oscar is just still so white. And it's like, no, they're not white. They're Mexican, and they're like destroying the Oscars right now. Like, this is what I'm talking about. It's only a black and white issue when it comes to that. And I think that without making it so political, it ties in to why there's not a representation of more foreign films in the Oscars. Is because, I'm going to be completely honest, I think after so many years of following it and doing what I do, it's, I really just think it is an American ceremony. I mean, yeah,
100%. Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess you can't really get mad about the other stuff, and at the end of the day,
it's still fun too, though. But
oh, absolutely.
No, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah, it's something that a lot of people don't realize, is that Mexican filmmakers have been like heavily killing it at the Oscar game recently.
Mm-hmm.
I know, honestly, I'm not gonna lie, I don't really follow the Golden Globes like at all, but I know that was really great for Guillermo del Toro.
Mm-hmm.
Another Hispanic filmmaker to get a win. That's great. And his speech was great. Did you see that?
No, I still have not seen The Shape of Water.
Oh Jesus. Okay, I went and saw it again for the second time last night. But no, the speech that he gave for Golden Globes was actually really, really cool. Definitely look that up if you find the chance.
See, the crazy thing too, and I think now that we're on the Golden Globes, is I'm on the Oscars website right now, and Greta Gerwig was not even nominated for Best Director at the Golden Globes. She's nominated for a Best Director with the Oscars, but she wasn't She wasn't even nominated for the Golden Globes.
She wasn't nominated. She also directed Saoirse Ronan to win the Best Actress for the Golden Globe, if I remember right. And
yeah,
Lady Bird won that category for Best Picture. So yeah. it doesn't make any sense to not even have Greta nominated for someone who wrote and directed that film.
Yeah.
It boggles my mind.
It was intense watching that ceremony, especially with God, you could see how tense the room was, how every male in that room was so tense. But like, I think whenever, I can't remember who it was. I'm sorry. I really don't. I don't think it was Natalie Portman. I can't think for the life of me, but somebody came up and was going to announce the nominees for Best Director. And they were like, now to announce all the male nominees. And like, they said it like that. And it was just like, oh my God, you know, it was just so crazy. Cause it's like, yep. Yeah, she's right.
That was Natalie Portman.
Definitely. Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
It's intense, man. I mean, I guess we can talk about, let's see here. Let me go back up to the best pictures. I guess Get Out. That came out last year, like February of last of, it came out a year ago because it came out in February. I watched it for my first time in New York with Steven, my buddy up there. And I remember we loved it. The first time watching, I mean, it's one of those movies that you walk out of the theater and, it just shakes you, you know? And I mean, besides the obvious like social commentary to it, it shakes you in ways of just being a great film, just being entertaining, suspenseful, well directed. I mean, you know, coming from Jordan Peele, who is just, you know, we just look at him as being this hilarious guy, but he made a pretty intense film. That's the first one that I saw out of all the nominees because it came out so early. So I guess what did you think about Get Out when you first saw it?
I also really loved it. I loved it more than I thought I would because I've never been a huge horror film person. But also, I mean, you can look at it in like a dark comedy kind of way. There's mm-hmm. definitely comedic parts to it, obviously. And it takes itself seriously, but not at the same time in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, leave it to Jordan Peele to strike that perfect balance for that. And I thought the acting was great. I'm a huge Catherine Keener fan. And, I forget his name, whoever plays the father. But I thought those two supporting roles were great. But also just the main actor. I forget his name. I can't pronounce it right. But ever since Black Mirror, he blew me away in that performance. It's really, really mind-boggling just like how well like just executed that entire film is. But honestly, it may be my biggest surprise for being nominated. I just didn't think it was going to get nominated. I'm glad it is. I definitely think it deserves it, but I didn't pick it as the type of film that would ever get nominated for Best Picture.
Do you remember me saying that I believed it was going to get nominated for Best Picture?
I do a little bit, yeah. Okay. That's been the rumor for a while, too, is like, it's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's probably going to get nominated.
That's because that's the first, I think after, you know, I think the Oscars is kind of like that movie, it's kind of like baseball, you know, like, you know, and it's that movie that Aaron Sorkin wrote, the Moneyball. It's a lot like that. And so, you know, I love predicting what I think is going to win, at least Best Picture, if not other categories as well, just because since I've been following the Oscars for so long, it's statistical. It's kind of like a pattern. It's kind of like a game. You can kind of determine outcomes based on, based on just the statistics of everything. And so I remember whenever every year I try to go watch all the nominations as well. This year I'm a little behind. I still think I can make it before the ceremony actually comes around, but I'm a little behind with just a few of them. But I remember every year, even before I had watched all of them, I would always walk out of the theater with the Best Picture and go, that's going to win. I mean, like, it's just a feeling that I always had walking out. And it has for like the last 5 years, I've called it, just because it's just one of those things where you walk out of the theater. And even if it's not the greatest movie ever, or, you know, something that you're going to love and remember, purchase and have, you know, for the rest of your life, you can feel it and go like, holy crap, that's the best movie I've seen all year. I really do think that's going to win. And I remember walking out of the theater with Get Out, and people like Steven, who's been my best friend since fourth grade, he kind of knows that I do that. And so I said it. I was like, I think that's going to be nominated for Best Picture. I didn't say it was going to win. I was just like, I really think that's going to be nominated. He goes, really? You think? And I was like, yeah, I really do. I was like, that, you know, that movie obviously tipped its hat to a lot of stuff, like we talked about the other day, like being John Malkovich, which if people haven't seen, they should definitely go see. It's a really enjoyable movie, even for people who, you know, don't really like watching more, you know, different films and, you know, stuff like that. But it's still really entertaining. You got a lot of great actors and actresses in it. It's very quirky. But it pays a lot of homage to that movie, and I can't think of the other ones, but there's a lot of other movies that people were like, well, yeah, it's like, it's a kind of hat tip to this and that. So it wasn't like the most original thing in the world, but the way that it was directed, the way that it was, you know, portrayed with the social commentary, I think is what made it so striking. And I remember just walking out of that theater and saying, like, that is going to be nominated at the very least. Like, it's so early in the year, and I remember I was scared saying that because I like, you know, let's, you know, play on the name of the podcast. I like to be right, and when it comes to movies, it's just fun for me, right? I mean, it's just fun for me. People have fantasy football.
Of course.
People have fantasy football. I have this. I have this little thing. That's what I have. You know, fantasy football and stuff like that. It's sport lovers and sport fans' way of being cocky and knowing more than their friends. You know, having, you know, betting on players and stuff like that, and there's prize money at the end. I don't go that serious with it, but I like trying to evaluate and guess what will be the best picture.
Okay, but have you ever heard about that? That's an actual thing, though. It's Fantasy Movie League, I think it's called.
Yeah, I have heard of that, actually.
That's wild. It's where you, like, set up, like, a fake movie theater, and, like, you choose which showings and, like, try to do the best outcomes for all of that. I've never done it, but it seems extremely...
I don't know
extremely...
if I'd be good at that.
You know, I think you would. If you like guessing and being like, oh, what's going to win this week or stuff like that. It's just
That's
like
true.
On a micro scale. For
Because it's like
mini
box
Oscars.
Office stuff too.
Yeah, it is box office. Yeah, which would kind of make me upset because I don't like choosing box office stuff. It's great, but I like try to put like 10 showings of Call Me By Your Name and fail every week probably.
Oh my god, I know, right, man? Like, I was gonna get to that. I mean, I know we have a lot to say
yeah,
about that
we
movie,
will.
So. But, yeah. Just to, I guess, end it out with Get Out is yeah, I mean, it was, I think that's the thing that you kind of realize about a film like that, is like, wow, it's amazing. But, you know, there was a lot of things that it didn't do or could have done, and it maybe it didn't need to. You know, maybe it's exactly what it needed to be. And I think this is honestly a film that doesn't need to win anything. I don't think it wanted to win anything. I think it's just it was a beautifully made movie that put a lot of good points across. And that's what's important, I guess. Like, you know, not every, and I think that's why, you know, we have the term that's deemed Oscar bait. Like those movies that are like clearly trying to win an award. And even if the director is like an auteur and like really, you know, believes that he made a piece of beautiful art, like, yeah, let's be honest, it's a lot of the stuff is very Oscar baity, and who doesn't want to walk up on that stage and hold that little golden mail for a couple minutes and make a speech that, you know, you get played off with? Can we discuss that? Why is the statue a mail? I'm just kidding.
I don't know. I've never questioned that.
We will make people question and revolt.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get different something. We'll just make it some abstract sculpture instead. But oh yeah, no, there every year there are those Oscar baity, quote unquote, films, and sometimes they just completely miss the mark. I don't know if this was really trying to be, but God, all the money in the world. You never saw that, did you?
I'm not going to.
I didn't really expect to like it going into it, but I didn't expect to hate it as much as I did. It was so bad. Oh God, it was boring. I would rather watch Solaris back to back with zero coffee than ever try to watch All the Money in the World again. And like, I don't know how you get it that boring. Oh God, but yeah, and just the. Everything about that film. It shouldn't have been nominated for that Golden Globe either. It's like...
Yeah. Oh my god. Like, quick Tarkovsky tangent. A new segment here on this podcast deemed Tarkovsky tangent. What do we say?
Okay.
What was that thing that we said the other day? Was you said coffee and Tarkovsky.
Oh yeah.
That was
definitely
awesome. But no, like, speaking of Solaris, I think Solaris, to me, was... Oh god, it was so boring. To me, it was. I mean, I tried. But the thing is that Stalker, I think Stalker, to some, would be as boring, if not more boring, than Solaris. But Stalker, to me, has just so much more memorable lines and memorable monologues. I mean, that's what it is. It's kind of like Persona, that, you know, I made that connection, Bergman's Persona, that, like, that, man, like, Stalker, it was just, like, those movies that are, like, literally, I can't even imagine what the scripts looked like, because it's just all monologue, and it's just, like, beautifully written, and I think that's what keeps me more entertained sometimes, you know, sometimes than visuals, which is why, you know, Lynch is so interesting, too, because he kind of takes away your Hollywood aspect of what a Hollywood production should look like, and the cinematicness of it. You know, people use that word a lot. Oh, that movie was so cinematic. And, you know, it kind of makes your stomach hurt when you hear that sometimes, because you have people like Lynch who make stuff that is not, but God, it's written so amazing, and it's better than a lot of the stuff that is considered cinematic. But a lot of times people don't give it a chance. Like, I didn't. I mean, at first I was like kind of skeptical about David Lynch, and I was skeptical about going in, but after you showed me Mulholland Drive, Jesus, like, I would, and then especially Blue Velvet. I think Blue Velvet is what sold me on Lynch, and there's still a lot of his movies I haven't seen, but yeah.
And you started Twin Peaks for the first time last night, didn't you?
Yes, I did. So I watched that series.
That is a journey I'm so excited for you to begin, because that was my introduction to Lynch, as many other people are that way, because back in the 1990s, like right at the beginning, it, like, Lynch became a household name because of that show, and especially after Wild at Heart won the Palme d'Or at Cannes Film Festival, everyone was talking about him. But then that's when you have, like, all this other stuff, and he just started getting weirder and weirder, and you'll realize that he cuts loose further he gets into Twin Peaks. He loses a lot of people, and also his he actually kind of stepped away mid second season. You're gonna be able to tell for sure, but stick with it no matter what, because then you get the opportunity to watch season 3, which is one of the best art pieces.
That's the one that came out last year, recently, right?
Last year.
Yep. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's I'm just waiting for you to get to that, because we're gonna have a lot to discuss when you reach it.
Oh yeah, I mean, just that pilot alone was amazing, so I'm really excited to start that too. Okay, so digressing back to the Oscars, I think this year, last year it was obviously Moonlight and La La Land. I think even just lay moviegoers who don't really care about, you know, film like other people appreciate it. I guess appreciate is the proper word for that, but like appreciate film. I think even the average person just knew it was coming down to those two films. And again, this is something that I kind of like to be right about. And I told everybody. I mean, I was like so cocky about it. I was like, no, Moonlight is going to win. And people would be like, no, La La Land was the best. I was like, no, shut up. It's gonna look at me in the eyes, right here, look at my face. It's not gonna win. You know, and, like, you're wrong. And at the Oscar viewing party, when La La Land won, oh my God, I had everybody texting me, telling me how big of an asshole I was and all this stuff. And I was like grabbing my hair. I was like, no, that's impossible. And then they came up on stage and, you know, the whole thing happened. And they were like, no, Moonlight actually won. I was like, oh my God, like, the world is feeding my ego right now. And, like, it was incredible. And I, like called people. I was like, you apologize to me right now. I want to hear you say that I was right. Tell me I'm right. It was hilarious. Yeah. But, you know, it's just one of those things that I think this year, I don't know if you feel the same way. I haven't seen it yet. I really haven't. But like I said, following all this stuff and keeping up to date with it and hearing other people's, I don't read a lot of critiques. You know, I try to sometimes, but I just kind of play what's happening in the world. But I don't know what you think, because you've seen both of them, but I think it's kind of looks like it's coming down to Lady Bird and Call Me By Your Name.
I would love for it to come down to that. I hope Lady Bird takes some of them, but I know with all the, what is it, 13 nominations for The Shape of Water, I wouldn't be surprised if it takes some of the nominations for just the technical awards, kind of like how Mad Max did a few years back. I hope
And
it does,
Gravity,
personally.
yeah.
Oh, and Gravity too. Yeah, because that's the trend I usually see is like something like sweeps a lot of the technical awards, but then Best Picture goes to something like, oh, something different, which is nice. But so I hope Lady Bird does get those awards that it's nominated for, especially Greta Gerwig. I would love to see her win personally. And you said you haven't seen Lady Bird yet, or have you?
No, it's a sh that's
Ah,
a
it's so
absolute.
good.
Yeah.
It should be all these films should be coming back to theaters eventually, I think, just because it's Oscar season. I know some of them are at least, but
Oh, yeah.
yeah, if you get a chance, definitely see it. It's for me, it's like it's like Lion of this year.
Oh,
It's
really? Wow.
oh yeah, for sure. Maybe not in like the cinematography aspect because Lion was stunning and gorgeous, but
Oh, yeah.
as far as like the movie that like really touches your soul and makes you bawl and want to cry your mother afterward, or want to make you call your mother
Oh my
afterwards.
god, dude, I was on a
Yeah.
date. I was on a date with Lion, and
Oh God.
it was still in the point of my life where I was dealing with a breakup, and I was numb inside and you know, that bullshit, but like I didn't know how to cry anymore, you know?
Oh yeah.
I'm being a melodramatic as fuck right now. That's my one
Oh,
effort for
that's
the podcast. But
why limit ourselves?
I don't know, man. We've been doing good, and I want to please the
Fair.
youth of America, even though this generation's going to be saying the F word in their interviews. But she was bawling her eyes out at the end, especially. And I'm a mama's boy. I mean, God, I grew up a mama's boy, so like the movie should
Oh
have touched
yeah.
me. But it did, and I mean, God, that movie was like amazing, but I was just like, I was on a date, and I guess I'm good at holding tears back when I don't want to cry. And I mean, I definitely would have, but man, she was bawling her eyes out, and it is just one of those movies that, yeah, I mean, it struck you. I think the only thing that I hated about Lion was kind of what Baby Driver had to deal with all year. It was like, oh, it looks like Drive. It looks like Drive. And I was like, you're just saying that because it's about a getaway driver. That's the only similarity it has. That's it. How many getaway driver movies do you watch? Like,
I've never
that and
heard that
Drive.
before.
Dude,
I didn't
it
know
pissed
that's
me
a
off.
thing.
Oh, it pissed me off. Everybody was just like, oh, yeah, it just looks like Drive. I'm like, how? In what way does it look
Yeah.
like Drive? And,
I never even would have assumed. They're just
oh, my
so
God.
completely different, even just like
Yeah.
tonally from the trailer. Like, I don't even know.
And then,
But
I mean, it has its obvious associations, but I mean,
yeah.
everybody was just like, "Oh, Lion!" It's just like Slumdog Millionaire 2. I was just like,
Oh God, are you serious?
"Yeah, oh yeah."
Oh no, that's awful.
So many
Jesus.
people. I don't think it's necessarily. It was like, I don't think it was even racist. I think it was just the fact that yes, it has the actor from Slumdog Millionaire, and from the trailers and stuff, like, you know, it's a lot of it is like from when they're kids, and a lot of the shots looked very similar, but because that's just India, you know, that's just like the way it looks on camera, that people just made the association of like, oh, it's Slumdog Millionaire too, because it's got the same lead actor, and it's like,
Oh
but it's
no,
not, but
yeah,
you watch it,
of
and it's
course
not.
not, definitely not. Oh yeah, no,
Ugh.
I never even heard of that. Oh, that's
Yeah,
rough.
and you know, you laugh about it, but at the same time, you're just like, no. God,
Yeah,
no. Like, watch these movies.
it's pretty cringy. It's like,
It's
oh
very
God, there's
cringy.
like, I love when people have complete misconceptions about like a specific movie. Like, I was with someone a while back and we were picking a movie and they were like, oh no, not that one. And they were talking about Edward Scissorhands. I was like, well, why not?
What?
And she's like, that movie's terrifying, right? I was like, Edward's, no, it's not at all.
It's like the
It's,
cutest movie in the world.
exactly. They thought it was like a horror film, like just like completely graphic. I was like, it's like the most family friendly thing. It's
Oh my god.
that's completely off. But it was
I
really funny.
remember, yeah, there was a girl I've seen for a while who loved Tim Burton. And I love Tim Burton too. God, I mean, I'm not like a fanatic by any means, but I respect the crap out of that director because he really did, he redefined what it was to make horror films for children. I mean, like, that's I don't know. I think he might have even created what that means, is making horror films for children. And, you know, I had never seen Edward Scissorhands, and, you know, it was on my shame list for sure. Like a lot of things that are on my shame list. But
for me, I think I gotta argue with that. I think Joe Dante probably would be closest to making horror movies with children. I don't know. I just have to argue because Tim Burton's not my guy. Something about his films.
I get you. But, well, what is Dante made?
Oh God. Well, he did a movie called The Burbs. That was great, but that's not really kid friendly. I think he directed Gremlins.
And, did he really?
And Goonies, if I'm remembering right. Here, let me.
Why does everybody think Spielberg directed the Goonies? Everybody thinks Spielberg directed the Goonies. That's like a little side tangent, but what the?
No. Unless he did, I don't know.
I don't think he did. I'd be surprised.
He did, or Joe Dante did Gremlins, Interspace, The Burbs, Small Soldiers.
Small Soldiers.
Hell yeah. Okay, he didn't do Goonies though. Maybe
who did Goonies? Oh, Richard Donner. Richard Donner did the Goonies.
I recognize that name. What else did he direct? Oh, he directed a lot of shit.
Superman.
Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon. Oh God, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Lethal Weapons are my favorite.
I've never seen those. I was only like halfway through that show.
Dude, they remake their versions of like they make like Lethal Weapon 5 and Lethal Weapon 6, and like Frank, Danny DeVito's character, like funds the movies because he's like this apparent millionaire in the show, but they're like the lowest class of America, and it's just so funny because they're just awful, and they're trying to get like distribution, and they're going to like all these like businesses and trying to get them to fund this movie, and it's ridiculous. But the gag of the whole thing is that of course, and you know, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you love it or you hate it. We had discussions about that and like what they're trying to do as a show, and it's not, you know, it's not racist to be racist. It's racist with some sort of context to it, but like,
yeah, it's meant to be cringy, which it very much is,
to prove a point. Yeah, to prove a point. But like Mac plays the partner as blackface, and
oh like, God.
And it's like, but they make it relevant, like how wrong it is. And so then they switch characters in the middle of the movie, and then Dennis plays the partner as a white person, not in blackface. And then Mac plays Mel Gibson's character. And so everybody's just like, wait, so why have you switched characters? And it's ridiculous, as that show usually is. But yes, back to God, what the hell were we talking about?
Well, we can tie it back because of those episodes with Guillermo del Toro on It's Always Sunny. He played like he had a cameo in a few episodes.
Guillermo del Toro was in It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, did you not know that?
What?
He plays, what are those two, the Boyle brothers? What are those two?
Oh my God, he does. He plays the father who can't talk. Holy shit! That was Guillermo.
That's him, man.
The one who like can't string a sentence together.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like the trial episode or something.
Yeah, when the bird eats the guy's eye out. Yeah, he's hiding. He's the one who's hiding the bird under the hat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, that's Guillermo del Toro, dude.
I think I literally just fell in love with him even more as a person.
He's so great. Honestly, okay, speaking of him just as a filmmaker, I need to see more of his films. I haven't seen any Hellboy. I haven't watched his early works like
You haven't Kronos seen the original Hellboy?
No, I haven't seen any of those.
Oh, man.
And I hear Devil's Backbone is an amazing film that I just haven't watched yet.
Kronos was one of those of his that wasn't as acclaimed by the public as other, but I still want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Criterion has a copy of it, and every time I go somewhere and I see it's there, I'm like debating on buying it. I'm like, eh.
They've got that box set of his films too.
Yeah, they really?
That's cool.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, it's like a trilogy set. It's got Devil's Backbone, Kronos, and Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh my God, Pan's Labyrinth! Don't even get me started on that movie. Yeah, that movie changed my life as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be a fun episode to do, is movies that changed our lives as a kid.
Oh, yeah. That would be incredible. I think if anything, recently. I think the movie that, and like I said, it's maybe too soon to tell. There's that thing that I call, I actually don't have a name for it. I'm not going to act like I do, because I was just really going to make it up on the spot. But it's like, it's the overexcitement that you get when you go to a movie. You know, you have the loud music, the surround sound, the Dolby, just beautiful sound as you're watching a movie on this big, glorious 4K screen nowadays with the projection that we're dealing with nowadays. And you just, it sometimes makes the movie seem a lot better than it really is. And then you watch it, like, at your home, excuse me, on DVD. And you're just like, wow, I remember liking that a lot more in the theaters. And it's like, because it's the experience, it's the you know, it's the elements that you're in. And I think I think you know, sometimes I need to wait until I see a movie a few times in a theater, or see it a few times in theater and then see it a few times if I own a copy of it, to really kind of have an elongating effect of, my God, that movie really made an impact on me. But seeing it twice in theaters already, I think Call Me By Your Name is just the movie that lately just destroyed me emotionally and really made me think, and just overall, man, just that's everything a movie should be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, getting into Call Me By Your Name, that I heard so much going into about that film, like going into it, because that had been on everyone's radar. I forget when it first premiered, either at TIFF or Sundance, like a year ago, and it just took forever to like actually get wider distribution. And I took a trip to New York with my family this winter, so I got to see it, and it's hard to process a film when you have such big expectations for it. Like, that's the way Moonlight was. You just hear so many things that you gotta like watch it and then like take a full step back and be like, okay, like, what did I actually think about it? But no, Call Me By Your Name hit like every expectation I had, and there's so many different details about that film that just boggle my mind, whether it's Timothée Chalamet's performance, just the use of one 35 millimeter lens, like, that just technically, that also boggles my mind. But just every single cue, like with the music and like where it cuts off, it just swoons me real hard.
Oh yeah.
It's very, very good.
I think was the director Italian?
Yeah. Luca Guadagnino.
Luca Guadagnino, yeah. I think he's made a name for himself in the United States, which for foreign directors is really hard to do sometimes. And I think this movie is going to change a lot. And I think I was mentioning about this to you, and I wanted to talk about it now, but you lent me Susan Sontag's On Photography, and there was a passage in there. Let me see if I can find it. But she is talking about how art has the ability to legitimately change people's morals on stuff, or have them, you know, question things, and because of how powerful certain things can be. And I think I wrote Call Me By Your Name next to it because it is just, it's exactly what I jumped to in my mind as, I think that's going to do that. Because I have, you know, I have friends and brothers and stuff that don't always necessarily, you know, I you know, watching Brokeback Mountain growing up, it was one of my favorite movies. And, you know, coming from the Midwest, from a small town, I got made fun of a lot for it. But I wasn't doing it to be funny. Like, I genuinely, that movie just touched me emotionally in a lot of ways. She's talking about the photographer Diana Arbus. Am I pronouncing that right?
Diana Arbus. Which, yeah.
God, her story is something else too. That is story for a different day. But she is that's depressing, her life. But I mean, you know,
she's a huge icon in photography. She's
An
amazing, amazing person. Yeah.
I mean, she compared her to Sylvia Plath, who wrote The Bell Jar, which I had to read my last semester in college. And Sylvia Plath as well was one of those just torture artists that wrote about her or, you know, wrote fictionally. It was kind of like, you know, what do they call it, like kind of autobiographically fictional kind of thing. Like, it's definitely about her life, but it's like a fictionalized story of her life. And and she ended up killing herself too, and it's just, you know,
yeah,
so tortured artist. But it says that Arbus's work is a good instance of leading tendencies of high art in capitalist countries to suppress or at least reduce moral and sensory queasiness. Much of modern art is devoted to lowering the threshold of what is terrible by getting us used to what formerly we could not bear to see or hear because it was too shocking, painful, or embarrassing. Art changes morals. That body of psychic custom and public sanctions that draws a vague boundary between what is emotionally and spontaneously intolerable and what is not. And so that thought just automatically, because it's so relevant, made me think of Call Me By Your Name. And I think that dealing with LGBT films in the past 10 years, and I say that because, God, when did Brokeback come out? I think that was 2004 or something like that.
Yeah, long time ago.
But 2005. So over a decade ago. I just don't like that, honestly. Like, I'm not trying to be that guy, because I know a lot of people dislike, you know, this. But, you know, that's the point. Is I don't like the categorization of LGBT films, because I think we're growing to a society where love shouldn't have to be defined of anything. It shouldn't be considered an LGBT film. It should just be considered a romance, right? And I think that's what Call Me By Your Name has established for the LGBT film and community, is that this is not a quote-unquote gay film that a lot of people, oh, that's the gay film, right? Oh, Call Me By Your Name, that's the gay film, right? You know, you hear that a lot. And yeah. But when people watch it, I think the way they walk out of the theater is emotionally crushed, devastated. You know, Luca Guadagnino, he even didn't put as many explicit scenes in there as he could because he wanted to focus on the love. He wanted people to genuinely believe that these two people were just in love without having to show sex as what defines love. And I think he successfully made this first, and in my opinion, it's very big. It's like this, since Brokeback Mountain, it is this first, like, publicly, I say that very, very tentatively, like, publicly accepted movie that is LGBT to its core, but is starting to break away from that and just say, we can all watch movies that are about love, whether it's defined between a man and a woman, or a man and a man, or a woman and a woman, or a transsexual and a woman, or anything. It can be, it's love. If two people love each other, it's love, and it can be, it's a romance, right? We shouldn't have to say, like, oh, I'm just, because of my morals, I'm not really big on LGBT films. You know, it's just like, I want to get out of that. I want to say it's a romance. I think Call Me By Your Name is going to go down as much of a date movie night movie as The freaking Notebook. I really do believe that.
Wow, that's actually interesting. I think there are other films that also have kind of, like, helped lead the way for this. As far as, like, exposure and being nominated for an Oscar, I think it's about time that there is a film that, you're right, I don't know that I've seen much press or anything refer to it as, like, the gay film. Which is good, that's refreshing. But at the same time, like, obviously people are going to go into it with that mentality. Mm-hmm. But I think with LGBT films, or, like, films that actually show, like, a bi or homosexual romance, a lot of times they never live in the end. Like, look at Brokeback Mountain. And a lot of times, like, in order for you to feel that heartbreak, you have to, like, kill them off for some reason. So it's refreshing to have a film where, like, they're allowed to exist in that space. Like, and no one has to die because of your sexuality. Oh, yeah. So that's good. And also, a few films have been doing that. Like, as far as, like, big, wide distribution films. Like, I know Carol did that last year. And there was a lot of controversy, too, because it wasn't even nominated. And it should have been, no doubt about it. But, because that's a romance between two women. And, I remember there's an interview, I may be misremembering this, but I'm pretty sure Rooney Mara was talking about how if the gun went off in the third act, then it would be nominated for Best Picture. But because there wasn't, like, a violent act against these women, then it didn't really break anyone's heart, I guess. So
it's
important to have films where it's treated like an actual romance, not like a live or die situation, because stakes don't have to be death and life. They really don't. So that's why I'm really happy with this movie getting as much attention as it is. But you're right. I think eventually we'll be able to say, like, yeah, it's just a romantic film.
It's a romance, yeah.
Yeah.
I think as much as it kind of goes against what you just said, I think they are very mainstream films. I understand that, and I need to watch more. But, God, I think besides Brokeback Mountain... and Call Me By Your Name, I think it really isn't considered an LGBT film. It's just a biopic that deals with homosexuality, but is Philadelphia, that John Denny.
Oh, hell yes.
That's honestly one of my favorite films of all time. I think I would consider that being in my top 10. Like, it's a movie that I can watch countlessly. I mean, God, the scene where he's listening to the aria, I can't remember, what it is, but he's listening to an aria, and he's Denzel's character. Denzel is his attorney, and he's like trying to work, and he's trying to sit him down, but he's just listening to this aria, and it's just this one moment that you can see this character who's finally afraid, and he's just bawling his eyes out, and he's talking about how beautiful the aria is, and he's telling Denzel what it's about, and he's dancing around connected to his IV stand and everything. But it's this scene that, I mean, the way that they light it, it's lit so surreal, because he goes into this trance, just like we have seen in Blue in the Three Colors trilogy and in Call Me By Your Name, those moments where the colors really represented something of that is going on inside of these characters' minds. And oh my God, I mean, that is one of the most powerful scenes in a movie I think I've ever seen, is Tom Hanks finally in that movie, just for that one moment, and it's represented in such a surreal way of just him finally being afraid of dying, whenever this whole movie he's been so nonchalant about it, and just understanding that he has AIDS and he's probably gonna die, but that's just like one moment that he just doesn't want to talk about the case, he doesn't want to deal with anything, and he's just explaining this aria and how beautiful it is and how sad and tragic it is. And I think Denzel's character even sees that. That movie is just, it's so powerful, man.
I haven't seen that in years, but I agree. It's one of my favorite movies. I don't remember all that much, but there are specific things that I especially remember. Like, I just remember like the courtroom scene when it's like facing the camera, like shot to shot, like head on. But I also remember like the final 8mm film at the end, like, as it's playing, that part always kills me. And I'm a sucker for when that happens, whether it's, like, that or fucking Paris, Texas. Like, I think there's just something so nostalgic and so, like, heartwarming. Or it just really guts you when you see, like, a film and, like, just any kind of 8mm film that, like, someone shot, like, for personal reasons. Like, just, like, to keep track of, like, a family. Anything.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't know if they do that. No, I'm thinking something different. But just anytime that, like, people are watching something as a family, and it's, like, old reels of film, it guts me every time.
Yeah. I think that, God, yeah, that was probably the best way to end that movie ever. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, Paris, Texas as well, that movie, I think, got me so emotionally too. I mean, like, I'm not a father and I don't have any kids, but that movie is just, it is so beautiful in the sense of what it is like to be a father. And there's a lot of movies like that, but that movie was done so well, and by a German for that matter, you know. It's about Paris, Texas, you know, and he nailed it. I think it takes an outsider's perspective to sometimes fully analyze and realize sometimes how we live here, you know. I think he got a lot of crap when that movie came out. No, nobody wanted a German directing a movie about Texas, like, what, you know, it was so crazy. But, you know, sometimes it takes somebody outside to really make an accurate representation of what's going on inside. I mean,
that's an argument I've never understood, like, because whether it's like with When Wonders in Paris, Texas, or American Honey with Andrea Arnold. I think those two are very, for people who don't know who are listening, we're from Missouri, from Kansas City, and go to school in Springfield, Missouri. So having an area, and actually Andrea Arnold's American Honey was filmed on streets that I actually recognized. So to be able to like depict like our area like
right?
that, like it's,
yes,
it's,
that was awesome.
It's really pretty accurate. Like it's, there aren't many films that I think capture like the Midwest and like that kind of lifestyle like that film does. But going back to photography, with Robert Frank's Americans, it's one of the most important photo books of all time. And so and he like lived in New York, but he was an immigrant, and he captured America and like displayed it in a way that at the time was Leave It
you
to Beaver
Robert
style
Frank.
Yeah, Robert Frank.
Okay,
and
yeah,
so
the Americans, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, he, the way that America was depicted, like people didn't really want to see at the time. So in America it did horribly, but we look back out at it and like see it as this perfect encapsulation of America, and it did great in France, the book did, so which makes sense. But yeah, so it's, I think that everyone needs like an outsider's point of view to really like help and analyze like whether it's a society or even yourself, because sometimes like people, how you're perceived, like have a better idea of who you are than like yourself sometimes. I don't know if that makes sense, but like sometimes
it
you
does.
Just need
yeah.
you yeah sometimes the expert on yourself isn't really yourself, but how others perceive you.
That's what Susan Sontag was saying about that project as well, that photo book, The Americans, is that it's kind of what Diana Arbus was doing as well, is that they were focusing on the forgotten people of America, that, you know, America is depicted in such a way with stardom and celebrities, but those projects really did focus on, you know, Diana Arbus's Freaks. I looked at that collection of photographs, and you know, it's not, I think it was hard for me to understand why she did that and whether she was doing it genuinely because she just loved them and loved being with them, or if she was doing it because like she was fascinated at the fact that they were, you know, quote unquote freaks. But I think by the end of it, you know, you'll never know, that stuff kind of dies with the artist. But she was right in saying that, you know, those pieces, I think they made such an impact because that's true. I mean, the forgotten people of America, just the everyday working people. Why would you want to take a photo of that, right? What's interesting about that? What is fun to look at about a guy who's just in his trench coat, walking out from a long day at work? You know, in the Americans, this was the 50s. People still wore trench coats and tops hats, but you know, it was just like walking out and that depiction of the American working man leaving his job ready to go back home. You know, like what's interesting about that? Because nowadays it's all about, you know, where's Drake eating and where is, you know, I don't know a lot of famous people, but like Justin Bieber, what car is he driving and when did he crash it? It's just like, that's what's interesting to photograph now. That's what people want to see. Models, you know, their chiseled features, you know, objectifying them to the way they look. That's great. Whatever. That's that photographer and that model's business. But, you know, it takes those photo books and those projects that those people really devoted their lives to, sometimes quite literally, to depict something that they believed was just wholeheartedly beautiful that nobody else did. And they kind of reminded us of how beautiful it was.
Yeah, no, definitely. So. Yeah, there's, we can get into that at a different time as far as like paparazzi images versus like fine art photography work or portraiture, because that's a huge topic in itself. But I actually think we're closing in at right about an hour, so I didn't know how long our episodes should be.
Probably about an hour. We shouldn't torture everybody. It could be considered torture. We don't want to get sued or anything.
I think the podcast is already considered torture, but we'll. But if people listen to it, at least it'll be self-inflicted. So.
Oh yeah. Next time we'll definitely talk more about I guess what is that differentiation between fine art and mainstream art and photography and more art house films and stuff like that. But. Yeah, I think we should definitely talk about that next time. This was, we definitely kind of we did a good job of sticking with the Oscars this time. I think that's kind of good, though, but it gives people a perspective of what's going on. And we didn't, like, give movie reviews by any means. We're just talking, and I think people will enjoy that as far as an idea of what's going on in the world right now. But, yeah, we'll have a lot more interesting things to talk about, so hopefully people will tune in and listen.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
All right. Thank you, Zach, for tuning in on KEX Pretentiousness 10.1 In and Out. Bye.
All right, sounds good. See you, Johnny. Bye.